It makes sense now in hindsight, though, why product marketers are often given this responsibility, because they sit at this cross-section of sales enablement, product strategy, and marketing. And you need to know why you're winning and losing deals to be at your best in all three of those domains.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Product Marketing Life Show. I'm your host, Sid Katan, a Senior Product Marketing Manager at Beekeeper, and I had the pleasure of sitting down with Andrew Peterson, the founder of Closed. This was a super cool episode where we covered Andrew's origin story and how he made the jump from Qualtrics to founding Closed. He also gave us a really transparent overview of the win-loss space and how it's developed over time. We talked about what makes a good win-loss program and where AI fits into it. And we even covered how product marketers can sometimes feel underappreciated, why, and how win-loss kind of changes that paradigm. Super excited for you to listen to this one. Enjoy, and let me know what you think.
Andrew, thanks so much for hopping on. We have Andrew from Closed here. Andrew, can you just start by telling us a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, I'm an entrepreneur, co-founder of Closed. Been doing this for over 8 years now, which is crazy. Feels like we just barely started maybe a couple years ago. So that's just the journey of entrepreneurship. But it's been fun over these years to work with a ton of product marketers, and I'm excited to be on the show.
Very cool. I want to start with a few softballs. So I was, of course, you know, prepping a little bit, and I saw this video floating around on LinkedIn about you like tripping over a crib. What's the story there? What's going on?
Yeah, that wasn't the first time. That was just the first one caught on video. So I have 6 kids. So I'm in Utah, for listeners that are wondering. We have a lot of kids around here. Got 6. They're all boys, which is crazy. So oldest is 14, youngest is 3. It's just a madhouse all the time. And as you see in that video, it's just, there's traps set left and right. So it was pitch black in the room, trying to put the baby back to bed. You know, it's one of those moments, if you're a parent, you can relate to, where you're like, you've been for 30 minutes or 60 minutes trying to get your baby to go back to sleep, and finally did it and tripped over something going to the crib, and it was right back to square one. Had to go back and get the baby settled down again. So, but I'm proud I didn't fall all the way down, and, you know, protected little Troy.
That's some super dad skills. It sounds like you've had a lot of practice, and I'm also glad you caught it on tape. That's fun.
Yeah. For, I was telling my wife the next day, I was like, you should have seen it. It was so embarrassing. She was like, well, we've got the camera. Like, let's go watch it. So it's glad we got the footage.
I love that. Well, aside from having 6 kids and being an entrepreneur, what else do you do for fun?
Yeah, well, living in Utah is awesome. We have such great outdoor recreation. So anything active and outdoors, I love, whether it's hiking, trail running. Love to go skiing with the kids in the winter. They've all been learning how to ski. We go up to Sundance, which is a ton of fun. And yeah, Utah's a great place if you love the outdoors.
Very cool. So this one, I feel like now that you've told me you're a dad, it's pretty easy to answer, but I'm curious, just like, what's something totally unrelated to your job, startup, SaaS, that helps you every day when you, come to the office and start working?
Yeah, I think being dad is a good one to focus on, because it puts things in perspective for you. There's a lot of ups and downs in entrepreneurship. And when you come home and you see the family and the kids, and they're super supportive of you, you've got, in my case, a wife or partner that's super supportive, it helps you realize like what's important. And for some reason, it just keeps me kind of grounded and focused. It helps you empathize with your employees that are helping you build the company, that, you know, there's a lot going on in life besides just building the business. And you've got to be understanding of that and try to be accommodating of that. And so we do our best to be supportive of our employees with families too, and build a great business, but also recognize the reason we're doing it is, you know, number one, first and foremost, for everybody's support, a healthy lifestyle and a family if they have one.
I love that. It's hard to follow up with the talking about win-loss, but I would love to start talking about that. So you mentioned your business. Can you tell me a little bit more about the journey? How'd you make your way into the space of win-loss, and then kind of the pathway to even co-founding Close?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, back my first job coming out of college was in sales at a Utah company called Qualtrics. At the time, it was really small. It was 50 employees when I joined. And I was just super lucky to join a company that was on the cusp of a ton of success. So the company grew like crazy over the 8 years that I was there. We grew from 50 to like 1500 employees. And you just get a great career education being at a startup that explodes like that. So I was really, really fortunate with the timing of joining Qualtrics. I was, you know, blessed with a lot of opportunity to grow in my roles at Qualtrics and be given responsibilities that I was probably not qualified for. I for sure wasn't qualified for, but they just needed people to step up and take things on because the company was growing so fast. And eventually, after about 4 years in sales leadership, I pivoted to more of a product management role, incubated and launched a new product at Qualtrics. And during that span, I was pulled into a cross-functional leadership team that was responsible for implementing win-loss analysis at Qualtrics. And that was my first exposure to the practice as a former sales rep and sales leader. I'd had super interesting experiences like all sellers do, where you lose a deal and you have no idea why, or you think you know, and you find out later that you were completely wrong. There was one instance, for example, where a rep of mine on my team was working a big deal with Hyatt Hotels. And it would have been the biggest deal in company history at the time. We were going up against our number one competitor, and we weren't even a finalist in this RFP process. We thought we were going to win. And so CEO puts us all around the table. He's like, what happened? And everybody around the table gave a different explanation. And at the end, someone was like, why don't we just call Hyatt and ask them? And Heather Briggs, the contact there, was super gracious to get on a call with me. She was like, we didn't even consider you guys. Like, your price was too low. Like, we looked at the price point you quoted, and we're like, we don't even need to read the response because they must not understand the requirements. All the other vendors are coming in here, and Qualtrics is coming in here. Like, they must not really understand what we're asking for. So we lost a deal because we were priced way too low. It's like reps always think they lose deals because they're priced too high. So experiences like that led to us realizing at Qualtrics, we need good win-loss analysis. I was pulled in as part of a committee to implement that, was able to explore best practices, was able to, you know, vet different vendors that could support us, and came out the other side of that experience, having selected one and worked with them, realizing like, hey, there's an opportunity for a much more tech-enabled solution provider that can make this process scale, that can make it much more streamlined and automated, that can integrate it with other systems and provide much clearer answers at scale for companies that are trying to do this, then we're available at that point.
Very cool. And I feel like you're the perfect person to answer this because you have the sales background. But like, sometimes I wonder, like, I don't know how well-versed you are in the history, but I'm curious how this got so much traction with product marketers, right? Like, as you mentioned, sales is often very close to the problem, and maybe that is the problem. But I'm curious, like, how did this just become a product marketing ownership kind of owned activity?
Yeah, that was a surprising thing for me. After founding Closed and getting traction as a company, was experiencing all of these product marketers who were being told to do win-loss analysis, or who were seeing the gap and realizing that to perform at their best in their role, they needed win-loss data, because I came up in sales and it was very much a sales-led initiative at Qualtrics. But Qualtrics, frankly, as a company, was underinvested early on in product marketing. And that might be why we were so late to the game with win-loss analysis. We didn't have a good product marketing team saying, hey guys, like, we can't drive good sales enablement, and we can't drive good product strategy, and we can't optimize our pricing, and we can't make the most compelling messaging if we don't really know why we're winning and losing deals. So we were kind of slow to get started with win-loss at Qualtrics. But in the early years of Closed, we quickly realized that like the most kind of aware prospects about the importance of win-loss analysis were the product marketers. And they were very often spearheading it, sometimes facing resistance from sales teams, sometimes, which baffled me because I'm like, why would you not want this data? But saw time and time again, product marketing teams coming up against some challenges presented by the sales team, being like, hey, stay away from our deals. Like, we own these. We already know why we win and lose deals. Like, back off. So that's been super interesting. So
it makes sense now in hindsight, though, why product marketers are often given this responsibility, because they sit at this cross section of sales enablement, product strategy, and marketing. And you need to know why you're winning and losing deals to be at your best in all three of those domains.
Yeah. And it's easier to take an objective lens, I feel like, because it's tough. It's sometimes tough to hear, right? It's tough to hear what the data says, what the customer says. I'm curious, like, there's a spectrum here, as you mentioned. You know, some people do this all the way to like completely manually, all the way to like very tech enabled. What would you say that spectrum looks like? What are the different ways companies can collect this information? And then where does closed, of course, play in that ecosystem?
Yeah, yeah, totally. There's kind of a natural progression companies go through. We refer to it as the win-loss maturity curve, where most companies start out with a really basic approach. That's like a CRM field, loss reason field that the sales reps fill out. And it's the easiest, it's the most scalable, it's free. So people kind of, you know, jump to that as a first stab at win-loss analysis, and then quickly realize, like we did with the Hyatt deal, like sales reps aren't totally objective. They don't always know. Prospects don't tell them everything, obviously. So in many cases, it's not the rep's fault. They just haven't been told by the prospect why they made the decision that they made. And so the sales reps aren't the best audience to solicit this feedback from. And so then companies progress to, okay, I guess we need feedback from the prospects. They might tap into conversation intelligence, you know, let's listen to calls, let's use, you know, Gong or whatever you are using on that front. But again, they realize prospects aren't being forthright throughout the process and sharing why they make their decisions openly with the seller. And so we've got to take a post-decision feedback approach to this, where once the stakes aren't so high, we go ask them for their feedback and learn really why they made the decision that they made, like we did with Heather at Hyatt. And so then that leads to kind of phase two of this maturity, which is, okay, we could probably cobble this together. We can probably do something scrappy. Maybe we as product marketers will just make these calls and interview. It's good for us to be customer facing, and we'll develop empathy. And then they quickly realize, like, man, this is a heavy lift. Like there's so much before you even get to doing the interview. Like you've got to pull contacts down from the CRM, and some product marketers don't even have access yet. So now they've got to go get access, learn how to use the CRM, pull reports, then align with sales on which deals qualify or don't, probably develop some process to qualify with the sales team first. Like, is it okay that we reach out to these contacts? Do you have any objections or the issues? Or is there a concurrent RFP going on with this deal that we don't know about, so we shouldn't reach out at this moment in time? So do we need some sort of validation from the sales team? When we do reach out, how are we going to automate that outreach? Who's going to send those emails? What system are we going to use? Are we going to incentivize them? And then do I do that manually? Or do we have some system to help with that? Then after all that, you're finally scheduling some. How are they going to schedule with me? Am I going to email back and forth, or am I going to give them a Calendly link, or what am I going to do? So it just becomes a heavy burden that there's a lot of excitement at first, but then the reality sets in that, man, this is really time consuming and difficult. If I don't have technology enabling this workflow, the interviews are time consuming. I'm not an interviewing expert with the number of interviews we want to do. Does it make sense to have a third party? Will we get more candid and unbiased feedback if it's just not someone from the company talking to them? And that's where, you know, many companies start looking at outsourcing to a third party, finding a dedicated solution provider to help them scale their program.
Yeah. I'm smiling because I've been in those trenches trying to set it up manually, and it's such a pain. I'm so glad Closed exists for that reason. Yeah, I won't go into the detail, but it's excruciating. And to do it at scale just becomes, there's so many barriers that come in the way. So yeah, I'm curious, like you mentioned kind of the tail end of this maturity curve is using a tech-enabled provider. What are a third-party, you know, vendor like Close? What makes a good win-loss program in Close? What do some of your best customers do that others don't?
Yeah. To answer that question, part of it has to do with, you know, the technology you're using, whatnot, but a lot has to do with just the methodology and approach you take to your program. Like smart, savvy product marketers who have done win-loss analysis before recognize that like the most important phase of their program is the implementation phase, because you've got to drive alignment with all the stakeholders. Because like I said, sales might be resistant. And if sales finds out later that you're doing this, they get really defensive and frustrated about it. So you want to approach them up front. You don't want to have the sales, the individual sellers having any say. You want to go straight to sales leadership and drive alignment. Like, you guys need this data. Very few CROs will disagree that their sales reps are wrong about why deals are won and lost. 99% of them will be like, yeah, like, we can't trust these lost reason fields in the CRM. Like, we need to get customer feedback, and they'll be on board. And so if you can get their buy-in, as well as, you know, buy-in from your head of product or engineering, head of marketing, like, you want that executive sponsorship from the very beginning, so they feel like they've weighed in on the approach that's being taken. They've been able to give their stamp of approval. They're not caught off guard later when, in a one-off scenario, a customer's like, who's this third party that reached out to me? Is this legit? And the rep's like, I don't know, this sounds like a scam. And it escalates and becomes this big thing, which has happened, you know, a few times, obviously. So you want to nip that all in the bud, get the executive sponsorship up front, because then they're going to be waiting and eager to hear the feedback. And you're going to have an audience with them as a product marketer to come to your head of product and engineering and say, this is what we've been learning. Like, we need to change our roadmap. Like, we need to prioritize this capability or feature that we don't have. Or, hey, head of sales, like, turns out, like, we are having some issues in the sales process that can be overcome with some enablement and some better understanding of the reps of how to deal with these situations that we're hearing about in this feedback. So yeah, that's probably the most critical, is that upfront alignment with your executive sponsor stakeholders. And then, yeah. And then from there, everything else kind of falls into place. We have some great resources that we can share with you, to share with listeners, about how to set up a win-loss program kind of step-by-step. Whether you're using closed or another provider, or just kind of piecing it together yourself, there's some helpful content that we can provide.
Very cool. And you touched on this a little bit, but there's the distribution piece to it as well, right? How you get this information back to product, sales, CS, everyone else. Do you have any thoughts or tips on how best to do that? Because sometimes I find, you know, For example, we use closed and we kind of do some of this work at scale. And then it's like, all right, we have a ton of reports. At this point, a ton of data. And it's like, how do we distribute this knowledge? There's, of course, many channels for it, and it all starts with leadership. But yeah, I'm curious from your perspective how you would go about it to really make the most impact.
Yeah. I think the clients of ours that have most success over the long run are the ones that are pretty liberal about sharing the insights across the organization and allowing different individuals and teams to draw some of their own conclusion. Yes, someone might latch onto a single anecdote, but by pushing all the information out, you're making everybody in the organization smarter, rather than trying to hold it back and at one opportune moment be like, hey, this, we've learned this, and I'm right about this thing we need to change on the roadmap. And ways you can do that are, for example, like, individual sellers really benefit from this information. Some companies are a little hesitant culturally to, like, share broadly each individual transcript, because it might, you know, incriminate a rep who did something poorly on a deal. But more and more companies are becoming very transparent, very open, very resilient to candid feedback. And if your culture is like that, then there's great benefits that come from disseminating the individual interviews out to that whole sales audience, whether it's through email alerts that come from the closed platform, or by integrating with a Slack channel that they have access to and posting those each time. Because what we found, for example, is about 1 in 10 of your losses, the prospect will verbalize in the interview that they are a valid win back opportunity. Like, they are interested in re-exploring your solution. And we tag those in the platform, and it flags those so people see, like, hey, this is a win back opportunity. But in many cases, the sales reps aren't pursuing those deals anymore. So they get this little alert that's like, hey, this is a win back opportunity. This is what they said. Like, you should be on guard. You should reach back out at this interval, because they have buyer's remorse. They don't like the solution they purchased, or something changed internally. They didn't make a purchase, but they're back to evaluating, and they want someone to get in touch with them. So those are the sorts of benefits you get when you start sharing them widely, not to mention reps just getting smarter about why deals are won and lost, so that they can change their behavior. Then, of course, you do need to aggregate the feedback. and share the highlights and the key kind of strategic takeaways with these executive sponsors. Because the other thing about win-loss is the big opportunities that emerge are usually such big strategic changes for the business that it takes the executive team to buy in order for anything to change. Like we've had customers where we have seen over the course of 4 or 5 years, constant constructive feedback about the same issue, but action is never taken. And that gets frustrating for the product marketers. They're like, they keep hearing the same things. And ultimately it's because the company's not making a change. They haven't addressed that key factor. And a lot of times it's because they're very hard things. Like we've had a, you know, software company get routine feedback for 4 or 5 years that they need to overhaul the user experience and interface of their product, and that they routinely lose deals over that. And that's a big change. That's a big investment that the executive team would have to be bought in to doing. And so you do, as a product marketer, need to pull up. A lot of product marketers do it quarterly and highlight those big key takeaways for their executive sponsors so that they can decide if they want to make a big change.
Yeah, I'm smiling because it's so true. Like once we implemented a program, we started to find, I mean, we knew about these things that reps were telling us, but now we like were able to put a finger on it and say, hey, look, like these reports, these third-party reports, we're not even like biased or making this up. This isn't a small sample size. This is just continuing to happen. And I think that is what often shifts belief. So there's a human element, there's the other element. And now, of course, we need to talk about AI. How is AI going to reshape win-loss and how companies should approach it?
Yeah. Dude, I love this topic because it's so exciting for win-loss as a use case. Because what's held so many companies back historically has been, this is super manual, but it does require human savvy to conduct these interviews effectively. And that's either a ton of time and resources or a lot of money to pay to a third party. And we're now entering this new era where AI is going to be able to do the parts of win-loss that humans have had to do historically. So, and it scares some of our clients. Like we have a customer advisory board that we've shown prototypes to of an agentic interview where, you know, the agent's talking to you and it kind of looks like a human, but it's kind of janky still. Like it's obviously AI. And on the one hand, you have like the CRO of one of the Mag 7 that's like, this is awesome. Like, why would we not try this? There's so many deals that we're not even touching because we can't afford it. So if this becomes available, like at the very least, we'll just try it and get more feedback. On the other end of the spectrum, you have like a long-time win-loss practitioner who's run win-loss programs for years and years in multiple companies. And she's like, no way in hell, like never subjecting my customers to this janky AI experience. That's not, we can't 100% guarantee that it's going to be a positive experience or going to ask something wacky or whatever. So you still have very polarized opinions about it, but we all know like how fast the progress is happening and how much we've all embraced AI in such a short period of time and how paradigms are shifting. And ultimately, you know, in the next few years, AI is going to be able to run an entire win-loss program end to end for a much more affordable cost at total scale. So you don't have to pick and choose the deals you want feedback from because you only have X number of interviews that you can afford from a third party. It's going to be really exciting. So not to mention all that it will do in terms of the analysis. You know, there's so much gold buried down deep in your win-loss data set that unless you have, you know, hours and hours and hours to dig through it all and read every single interview, you might miss. And AI is already helping with our ask closed feature customers to kind of drill down, probe for insight that they weren't able to mine for before. So a lot of positive things happening for the win-loss use case with AI.
Very cool. Yeah, I was going to say there's many use cases kind of hidden in there as well. Like the AI interviewer, I mean, it, like you said, it's polarizing. I don't even know where I fit on that spectrum.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it, eventually it will catch up and it'll make sense. But there is like the, whatever, like the consumer kind of expectation elements, right? It's like, am I really talking to a robot right now during this win-loss interview? And is that okay or not? And like you said, you know, things will change pretty quickly. Okay. So you mentioned it can do the analysis. It can help with interviewing. Is there any other use cases you're excited about when it comes to?
Oh, for sure.
Dude, it's for any sort of qualitative research process that anyone runs, you think about how AI can help, man. You think about deal selection. Historically, it's had to be very rigid. So, you know, the closed platform automates deal selection. We've got a really powerful workflow feature that as data comes in from Dynamics or Salesforce or HubSpot, it'll look at each deal and assess each deal based on different parameters and be like, yeah, this deal qualifies for feedback. And, oh, these deals that fall in this bucket, we need validation from the sales reps, and it'll kick off outreach to the seller on the deal and say, hey, can you come into this contributor portal and tell us whether or not we can reach out to these deals? All this stuff's to kind of automate these manual processes, but it's still not intelligent. It's only as good as whatever, you know, and or statements you've created. And AI, you know, could assess each deal more intelligently and be like, hey, this deal, it makes sense to solicit feedback. This deal, there's kind of an edge case. This is an interesting one. We should ask the sales rep for permission. Or, you know, this one, clearly we shouldn't reach out because I see in the other part of the CRM that this deal has another opportunity open. So I don't think we should reach out, just like a human would do if they had the time to really look through all the details. Then you move past deal selection and you're like, data's missing. Every company has issues with data hygiene. You're like, well, why don't we just connect to Gong or whatever conversation intelligence tool and scrape it and figure out who the primary contact was and what their information is. And we can fill in the missing information for the rep. We don't even have to ask the rep to fill in this missing information because we can go get it. So the AI will be helped with deal selection. The AI can help with data hygiene. The AI could then help with personalized sequences. You know, you can somewhat personalize the sequences now with like piping in text and getting creative about making it sound personalized. But what if the AI can just, based on all the call recordings that it scraped and all the CRM data that it pulled, put together a very compelling personalized message for that prospect to invite them to give the feedback? You know, you're going to see participation rates improve. It could be smart about the incentive strategy. Sometimes our humans go in and alter the incentive amounts for higher profile titles or more senior prospects that we're reaching out to, or for segments of the pipeline that have been underrepresented. So it's like, yeah, let's pay a higher incentive here and here and a lower incentive here to stay within the incentive budget. Well, AI could do that. So you just start thinking about each step of the whole qualitative research process. And it's like, man, AI can optimize all of this and help us get more feedback from more of our customers and analyze it more effectively and distribute it out to the right stakeholders with personalized insights for those stakeholders. It's going to be really exciting.
Very cool. Well, yeah, thank you for sharing your future roadmap. I'm gonna save this part and use it later.
Service, I'm going to be held accountable to it. That's a lot of stuff to go build. So we're going as fast as we can.
Product vision is there. I love it. So I think this does bring me to a tougher question, but maybe not tough for you. What is the difference between you and your competitors? Like, and let's assume maybe that's Clue. What's the difference between closed and Clue?
Yeah. So our competitive landscape is interesting. We've got legacy providers that have been doing it a long time that have a lot of expertise, but their specialty is the human element. So there's a cohort of competitors that do that. They do very high quality interviews, know how to run programs. They are a bit expensive. They may not scale as well. There's going to be a lot of kind of manual interfacing with them to run the program and whatnot, but the quality of the insights will be high and they'll be a good partner in helping run the program. Then you have closed. We came from that background, but have been very aggressive about investing in the technology. So you've got the human element and the services, where we've conducted now over 8 years, just shy of 50,000 win-loss interviews. And so a lot of expertise built up on our services team, complemented with our platform that we've built and just completely focused on win-loss analysis. Clue is interesting because they're kind of a newer entrant into our space. They acquired one of these services providers, DoubleCheck. Clue is a very successful software company. They are, you know, historically been primarily a competitive enablement software company to help, you know, scrape competitive intelligence from the public domain and put together battle cards and deliver that enablement to sellers. And they, like other battle card providers, recognize like win-loss is a great channel of insight about your competitors and can feed these battle cards. And so I think they made the savvy move of acquiring DoubleCheck and now, you know, applying their tech savvy to building out some of the functionality like what we have. They just haven't been at it as long. So in terms of like the maturity of their win-loss product, it's not where Closed is. And, you know, they continue to innovate on the battle card side. So I think they've got a lot that they're working on. But definitely a, you know, competitor that we see in a lot of our deals. So yeah, it'll be interesting, I think, to pay attention to what new entrants emerge, because you've got legacy service providers, you've got Clue with the compete background coming in, but I expect there's going to be kind of AI first, AI native entrants coming into the space that will bring kind of a whole new perspective to win-loss analysis that will be really, frankly, exciting to kind of push the space forward and challenge us and our team to say, are we on our A game in terms of our innovation and what we're offering to our customers to continue to deserve to be considered a leader in win-loss?
I love it. And you get to kind of do your own win-loss, right? Like a little meta, but you guys have to be drinking your own champagne.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We're our biggest customer. We have the luxury of inviting every prospect to participate in an interview. A lot of our customers, a lot of product marketers in particular, are budget constrained. They're kind of limited in how much they can do. So they have to kind of throttle their programs and aim it at a key segment and then maybe aim it somewhere else the next quarter. Whereas we get the luxury of just going all out across all our deals. So we definitely run our own program. We call it Close for Closed. It's good.
Nice. Nice. I love that. And I think I saw somewhere floating around, you launched something new. Would love to hear more. I think it's, I don't want to say it wrong. So you're gonna know it better than I.
Yeah. Yeah. So this one's interesting because we've talked about AI and the opportunities there, but we also know we still have clients that value the human element. And so we just launched the Closed Expert Network, which is a network we've pulled together of dozens of senior, like executive level individuals who can be matched to our clients to conduct some of their most important interviews. If they want to match like executive presence or whatnot on an interview, they're like, hey, for our most strategic accounts with our biggest customers where we were selling to, you know, the C-suite, like we want to have a former C-suite executive from that industry to be on that call and conduct that interview. We now have this expert network that we can match them to an individual from their industry that's far along in their career, super seasoned, super experienced, that's willing to come on and conduct those interviews. So we're excited to see that take hold. Like I said, we do tons and tons of interviews ourselves. We have an awesome internal team of interviewers. This just kind of augments that with a new dimension for clients that, you know, have that need. So they could do the bulk of their interviews with our in-house interview team. They could use our TechFlex interview technology to do some of their interviews automatically without humans. And then for key accounts, they could tap into one of our experts to match executive presence and augment their program in that dimension.
I think that's really cool. And I'm sure you see higher completion rates and response rates from that. What's the insight that drove this? Is there any like specific segment that is this applies to most or
yes? Yeah, it's definitely been driven by some of the more technical industries that we've started cracking into. You know, you talk about, you know, big banking financial services or cybersecurity, for example. Like, you know, some clients are just like, hey, it's hard for someone to get up to speed on all things, you know, this niche in cybersecurity without having been in it for 20 years. And so it can help in those sorts of scenarios. It's cool to see we're tapping into a whole bunch of new verticals, landing clients in construction and food services and healthcare. So companies outside of tech are starting to come to understand the importance of win-loss, but it's interesting because most of them don't have product marketing as a function. So you start to see a whole wide range of different, unique, new titles spearheading win-loss.
Yeah, a lot of education to be had. Andrew, this has been awesome. I appreciate you being so transparent parent and like really sharing a lot of insight that I think is hard to find without talking to you. So I really appreciate it. Something that I like to ask at the end of our episode is a fun little question I came up with. And it is, product marketing is blank. Fill in the blank.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. First thing that comes to mind is probably underappreciated. I think I've had the chance in Building Closed to attend a lot of product marketing networking events and conferences, obviously talk to tons of our clients. And what I routinely observe is that product marketers are expected to do so many different things. Like, and every company has a bit different of a definition or scope for product marketing. And that's got to be tough as a product marketer to go, you know, from one company to the next and have kind of the definition and scope and expectation in your role be maybe radically different. And you've got to be dynamic and good at so many different things. You've got to be capable of collaborating with totally different stakeholders. Like, the nature of product and engineering teams versus sales teams is so acute, and you've got to be able to navigate all those relationships. So you've got just a wide range of responsibilities working with a whole broad range of stakeholders who at the end of the day may just take your work for granted, and that's tough. So it's a tough job. It's a critical one, but I just feel like if anything, it's probably underappreciated.
That's a great, great answer. And I think, like, especially with win-loss, I think it's like one of those things that just becomes so embedded into the company that you forget the product marketer is the one who set it up. It's like, oh, that was a great idea. We needed to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that happens all the time. Yeah, people just take it for granted, showing up every day. Then one day it's not, you know, maybe a budget gets cut because the product marketing team is underappreciated. They're looking for ways, places to cut spend. They're like, oh, we can cut from this part of the business. And then all of a sudden, all these campaigns and initiatives, including win-loss, just shut off one day. And everyone's like, what the heck? It's like, well, what do you expect? You're not funding the team and you're not appreciating the team and recognizing the team that's made all of this possible. You're just taking it for granted. So yeah, it's a tough job sometimes, but I think the future is bright. I think AI is actually really promising for product marketers because you've got this broad scope and AI can just make you so much more productive and able to deliver in all these areas and maybe shift a little bit more of your time, effort, energy, and focus on the change management from everything you're delivering to the org and those executive relationships that maybe you run out of time to foster and incubate. You'll be able to focus more on those things because AI will kind of enable and do the more menial aspects of the job.
Yeah. I feel seen, Andrew, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will as well. So yeah, if listeners want to learn more about you and what the Closed team is up to, how can they learn more and follow what you're up to?
A lot of avenues. There's great content on our website. If you search for like the State of Win-Loss Analysis Report by Closed, we ran that in conjunction with the Alliance, like the Product Marketing Alliance. Got over 1,000 responses to that. It has awesome content about, you know, best practices, how other companies are practicing it, what channels they use, just a whole bunch of helpful information. We also have the definitive guide to win-loss analysis. So those are two really good content pieces that can help you kind of get started or take the next step with your win-loss program. You're welcome, of course, to reach out to me on LinkedIn or email me, andrew@closed.com, and we can put you in touch with team members that can give you the support that you need.
Awesome. Well, once again, Andrew, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, thanks, Sid. Had a great time.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.